Welcome to Slay, the podcast where we dive into all aspects of female health, fitness, and life. I'm your host, Louise Hazel, and in today's episode, we're going to be exploring the topic of restriction. Have you ever found yourself following a restrictive diet or fitness regime? Have you avoided social events because of being overly restrictive? Was it best to just avoid temptation altogether? And when is too much restriction bad for you? Joining me this week to dissect this topic is my partner in crime, my husband, Eric Strangis. And we're here today to discuss restriction. When is it all too much? Now, with Dry January behind us, I wanted to talk about this topic at a time when it wasn't going to discourage anyone from making better choices for themselves. But I have to ask the question, what is the point in taking part in Dry January if you're just chomping at the bit for a drink come February 1st? I've got so many questions for this podcast today. I don't even know where to start. But to start off, we'll begin with some stats, shall we, Eric?
Let's do it.
Fabulous. So Dry January is an annual health initiative that began in 2013 by Alcohol Change UK to address the role that alcohol plays in people's lives. Now, having grown up in the UK and also having grown up in a pub, I can honestly say that we as Brits needed it. You know what I mean? Like facts, straight up facts. Give us some more stats for Dry January.
Okay, Dr. Rocco Iannucci, director of the Fernside Residential Treatment Program at Harvard-affiliated McLean Hospital, said people take the Dry January challenge as a step toward changing their alcohol habits or to explore the effect of a month-long break that a month-long break can have on their health.
Yeah, I get that. That seems kind of legit. We'll come back and touch upon some of those topics later. But, you know, I think it's nice to take a break sometimes.
Sure.
According to Sarah Jo Nixon, a cognitive neuroscientist and the director of the Center for Addiction Research and Education at the University of Florida, what a mouthful, if you're a regular drinker and you suddenly change your habits, it can actually make you feel worse rather than better. Is that something you believe in?
That's a surprising fact right there. Dr. Duncan B. Clark, a psychiatrist who studies substance use at the University of Pittsburgh, says if you experience any alcohol withdrawal symptoms, particularly those that are severe, such as confusion, hallucinations, fever, or seizures, it's important to consult with a doctor. But that seems pretty obvious. Those are pretty severe.
Yeah, 100%. Responses. But I would never have thought that like alcohol withdrawal could lead to like really severe symptoms like seizures or even hallucinations.
I think if you're drinking a lot, it may.
Maybe. That to me is actually news to me. He also stated that people who engage in daily or near daily binge drinking, meaning men who drink five or more drinks and women who drink four or more drinks within a 2-hour span, should not quit drinking cold turkey without first discussing it with a physician. That's a shocker to me. The idea that like you're just slamming like four drinks in a session, perhaps during a lunchtime, but like if you want to stop, make sure you speak to your doctor first. That blows my mind.
Got to wean off the stuff.
That blows my mind. I would have just thought that, you know, going cold turkey would have been the best thing for you in that scenario.
Apparently not. Ooh. A study published in 2016 found that even 6 months later, people in Britain who had participated in Dry January drank alcohol on average one fewer day per week and consumed nearly one drink less each day that they did drink, compared with their alcohol use before the break. So they're drinking 6 days instead of seven now. That's basically what that sentence
that's
says.
That's an absolute result, I think, in the UK. 6 days out of seven, that's all right. One day off,
that's
Wednesday
good.
Maybe.
Yeah, for sure.
I love it. Eric, you recently decided to abstain and go cold turkey from a certain bakery nearby where we live. What does it mean if you're having to give something up completely in order to focus like on your long-term health? Tell us about your journey first and foremost.
Yeah, I think, well, first and foremost, it's important to know what you're giving up, right?
What were you giving up?
To give something up means that you had it in the first place. And I definitely had cookies from the Vaughn Bakery multiple times per day for about 6 months post-wedding. And if you've ever had these cookies, they're essentially the size of two of my palms put together. And that's in both diameter and in height. So they're quite sizable. Delicious chocolatey chips, melty. When you receive them, which I'm saying receive because I discovered about halfway through that you can actually Postmates these cookies. They come warm, right? Like these things are chewy, delicious. And so the thing about these cookies is you can also get them in a order of 6 packs.
Yeah, we found right? out.
So we start, and I didn't know that at first. And so that really took my cookie habit to the next level. And so I think, you know, if you need to abstain from something or give something up, first it's important to know what you had, right? you don't give something up that was not a big part of your life. You know what I'm saying? It has to feel a little bit like a sacrifice. So I think if you are giving something up, what does it mean to focus on your long-term health? I just think it means that you're human, right? And it means that you're normal. And it means that there's certain things that you like that might not be the most healthy things for you. And it might be better if you kind of started to cut down on the habit. And that's what I went through with this specific bakery and the 6 packs.
So where are you currently at with Levan Bakery? Like, do you have a sponsorship deal? Is that just completely off the table now? Like, what's the situation?
I don't know, but my point with the first thing that you asked me was to hopefully secure one. but right now, my habit with Levan Bakery is I'm off the cookies.
Okay, until so when? Is this a long-term thing, like forever? Because like you know, you made it very, very clear in December, Lou, don't let me go into Levan Bakery. I actually went into Levan Bakery and posted a picture of you. And I was like, if you see this man, you send him back home to this address. You put him in the first Uber and you send him back home.
But something's wrong with you because we were walking by the other day and you like tried to pull me into the door.
Did not.
And I have boundaries.
Did not happen.
So, okay, so where I am right now is I'm off the cookies for 2024, mainly Levan Bakery. That to me is a gateway drug. And so I think that you have to know your triggers. And mm-hmm. Levan Bakery for me, that's like a one and done. And I'm not really an extremes person, but on, you know, everyone had their in and out list for 2024. The number one thing on mine was Levan Bakery in capital letters. Wow. It's out. It is completely out.
Well, doesn't complete restriction just lead to like overcorrection though? Because if you think about like Dry January, for example, mm-hmm. you know, going back to our original point, like, you know, aren't people just falling straight off the wagon? Aren't they just simply, you know, as soon as February 1st comes around, aren't they just throwing caution to the wind and just back into the normal habits?
Yes, but I do believe that that is a mentality issue. Mm. And in my opinion, people who fall off the wagon think that there's a wagon to be on in the first place. Mm-hmm. And usually if you're thinking about falling off the wagon, there's an all or nothing mentality that you're bringing to the table.
Right.
And that I think in and of itself is not conducive to having a positive outlook towards whatever it is. So same thing with the cookies, right? Like I'm saying that I'm off the cookies for 2024, which is very much an all or nothing because I was all in. Mm-hmm. And I think that what we want to do is have a longer term outlook mm-hmm. on where does this fit into the bigger course of my life for whatever it is that you're trying to give up. But you tell me, do you think there's ever a time when restriction is okay?
Absolutely, 100%. You know, I think that there is, you know, a wide spectrum of restriction. And I think there are probably like 4 stages. I think, you know, at one end of the spectrum, and there's always going to be 2 ends that are an extreme. You've got, you know, no control, like zero control or regard or zero moderation for whatever it is, whether it be food, exercise, whatever, your habit, bad habit, whatever it is. And then the other end of the spectrum is too much control. So let's think, you know, let's take it in this instance, we're talking about Levan Bakery or food. So you've got people who have zero regard for moderation or control over what they eat. And then you've got people who have over control in what they eat and perhaps people who are scared of food. Mm. And then you kind of have that kind of in between. And I think that the two kind of ends of the spectrum in between are people who love food and respect that it has both negatives and positives. Love the way it tastes, but I know that perhaps I can't eat this every day. And then you've got people who use food And this is where I think majority of like athletes and, you know, people are thinking about food as fuel kind of live. And really, that's just, what do I need in order to get the job done? What do I need in order to perform a workout today or in order to reach my, you know, health or fitness goal? Mm. And so I think personally that you kind of want to aim between those inner lesser extremes, mm-hmm. enjoying your food and then perhaps having a purpose if that's your overall end game.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned being an athlete too, and I think of you obviously in your athletic career mm-hmm. and preparing for the Olympics. There's so much discipline that's required to prepare for an event of that magnitude. And more importantly, it's such a long-term goal. And that's so different than I think what most people think of when they think of restricting food or dry January, when they're trying to cut something out for a 30-day period. The discipline required when you're an Olympian means that you're preparing for something for multiple years. So what was it like prepping for the Olympics? Did you feel a certain sense of restriction in what you ate and what you did and how much you went out, like as far as your nightlife or your social life? Did you feel a big sense of restriction?
I'm going to be really honest. Absolutely not. If I think about the bigger picture, let's think about a 4-year cycle. At not one point I'm thinking about restricting food whatsoever as an athlete. I'm thinking about what do I need to get through this workout? Like, I need a isotonic drink. I need to fuel this competition. I'm not ever really thinking, in fact, quite the opposite. I actually didn't think about food at all. In fact, I remember a season whereby on Friday nights, me and my friends, and we were all like Olympic level athletes, would have fish and chip night. Yeah, fish and chips. Like, it's really not the healthiest thing. If you've ever been to the UK, I apologize.
The chippy.
But, you know, it's a staple when we would have fish and chip night. And it was the winter season, so it was kind of off season, but we were still competing indoors. I jumped a personal best in the long jump. I jumped like 6 meters 20. I don't know what that is in yards or feet or whatever.
Fueled by fish and chips.
The next week, I was at that same venue. I had fish and chips again that Friday night. Jumped the exact same distance that next Saturday. The exact same distance. Third week, didn't quite work. But, you know, so that's to say, like, when you're an athlete, you have to make sure that there's an adequate amount of energy and fueling when you're at the top level. But the reality of it is you don't really take it that seriously. If there's one thing that I regret about my athletics career, it's that I didn't have the knowledge that I know now, I have now about nutrition. Mm-hmm. I could have really optimized my nutrition and my performance way better. Here's what I will say though. Olympic year, the most restrictive year of my life. So all of a sudden you are thinking about performance in every way, shape or form. I was never thinking about restriction with regards to food, purely about exercise and working out, like my workouts, my sessions. So the fact that do I want to go to the cinema tonight and stay out till 10:30, or do I want to be in bed early because I've got a hurdle session and I've got a race at the weekend, mm-hmm. and it's really important that I get out of the blocks first and I hit those first. So there's always this kind of like end game, this longer term picture and this overarching picture of what is it that I want to achieve, and weighing up the pros and cons of, does this thing, whether it be a late night food, bring me closer or further away from my goal? And that's how like we elite athletes make our decisions. It's very black and white. Does it bring me further away from my goal? It's out. Does it bring me close to my goal? It's in. So you have to make some very, very strict decisions for yourself that most people wouldn't quite understand. Missing people's weddings, missing birthdays. You'll know about this as well, Eric. Yeah. You know, from your days in basketball, we talked about this, you know, between ourselves, the fact that, you know, you would miss a lot of family occasions, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, basketball season times up with the winter. So I remember missing stuff because I was on the road during Christmas or on the road during Thanksgiving. And at the time, you know, you obviously miss being with your family and you miss those things. But I think the point that you made, that I heard from you, and the thing that I think about when I think of those moments, is it never felt like I was sacrificing necessarily, because what I was trying to do meant so much to me that the other thing in comparison felt smaller. And it's not that your family isn't important when you miss time with your family or going to a wedding or so on and so forth, like you're talking about. It's just that, you know, this is a short period of time or something that really matters to you and is really important. And that dream, that vision that you're working towards mm-hmm. is so big and feels so real to you that you want to go after it with everything that you have. Mm-hmm. And so that almost becomes a more important purpose than the downside of missing out on a meal or missing out on something else. And you find ways to make up for, especially on the social side. Mm. But on that, you know, a really impactful conversation I had was when I was, I think, 11 years old. Mm. And my coach, who was a great coach, basketball coach, pulled me off to the side. And we had these binders, and he used to like write stuff in them. And it was almost like being in school, right? He was a great coach. It was awesome. And so we had these like one-on-one meetings with him. And he pulled me off to the side for my one-on-one meeting. And what we talked about was the fact that there were going to be times in my basketball career where I was going to have to make sacrifices. Mm-hmm. And he said, the example he used was, there's going to be days on a Saturday morning where all of your friends are going to be going to Disneyland and they want you to spend the night on Friday night. And you have to decide whether you're going to wake up and go work out on Saturday morning or whether you're going to spend the night at your friend's and stay up late and go to Disneyland and skip the workout. Mm. And you're going to have to make that decision, because for you, the trajectory you're on, those are the types of decisions you'll have to make. Mm. And I'll never forget that. I was 11 years old, but
that's amazing preparation and amazing foresight from a coach.
Yeah. And, but that to me, I thought about that. I still think about it. It's like, what is it that I actually want for myself? And are the things that I'm doing along the way in line with that? Like, are they deserving of someone who's taking all the steps necessary to get what they want? And I think usually if you take the right steps, more often than not, you'll come pretty close to those things, whatever it is.
Now, I want to ask you one question. I want you to think about this really deeply for a minute. Do you think it was healthy to miss all of those social events? Mm. Looking back in hindsight.
Yeah, and that's something I think we've talked about this a lot. The things that made you a good athlete, and you were, you know, an athlete on a much larger scale than I was, aren't necessarily the same skills that help you be a productive human being. Like, as an athlete, you have to have the ability to shut off your emotions no matter what the score is. Things are going good, you got to stay even. Things are going terrible, you got to stay even. And you have to almost put your emotions and your feelings to the side, because the competition matters more. Mm. And at times in life, that's okay. But over the long term, I don't think that that's necessarily healthy. And we've discussed that together. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you have to tune in to how you feel. So is that level of sacrifice healthy? I think in the short term, it's necessary, right? If you want to achieve or accomplish something that's really important to you, there's going to be decisions and trade-offs. I think over the long term, probably not. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, talking about coaches, I obviously am a big sports guy. And so I think about coaches like John Wooden, or think about the great basketball coaches or football coaches, whatever it is. And a lot of them talk about these intense periods of work and these intense periods of rest and relaxation. And those things over the course of a day might not be equal. You're not going to have an equal amount of work, an equal amount of play, an equal amount of relaxation. But over the course of a lifetime or a year or 4 years, there's going to be a level of balance. Mm. And I think people misunderstand what balance is. They think that if they're not getting one of those things at all times, they're out of balance. And I disagree. I personally think that there's going to be those intense periods of, let's say, restriction or trade-off. And there's going to be other times where, you know, you're not doing that and you're on vacation or you're relaxed or there's an easing of some of those things. So that's kind of how I think about it. But what about you? I mean, when your competitive career ended, did you have a big letdown in your self-control or your discipline? Or did you have a sense of dread that you had missed out on stuff?
There was definitely like a sense of easing. That easing happened at McDonald's in the Olympic Village. So after the London 2012 Olympics, and the heptathlon was always on the first weekend of competition for athletics. So after our 2 days of competition had completed, we would always get to just sit back and watch and enjoy the rest of the athletics and also the other sporting events, the basketball, so on and so forth. And yeah, I found myself every single night in the village, and bearing in mind the canteen, the cafeteria is open 24/7.
In the Olympic Village.
Correct. And in that cafeteria is a 24-hour McDonald's. And me and my friends, I remember, I won't name names just to save them the shame and the glory, would go out, hit the town in London. We'd take our like Olympic passes. You could get in any nightclub you wanted. You would come back in at like 2 a.m. straight to McDonald's. And oh my gosh, when I look at pictures of me post-Olympics, literally a week after, I look like a completely different person. Mm-hmm. Like I put on some pounds.
Really?
Yes. Because, you know, I was completely out of routine. I'd gone from not, I wouldn't even say it was 4 years of training. For me, it was from the moment my dad passed away in 2008, right the way through to 2012. It was a real weight that had been lifted off my shoulders. I was no longer needed to be anywhere. I no longer needed to show up to training the next day. Mm. It was the first time in my life that I could take the foot off the gas, because since I was a 10-year-old little girl, my dream was to become an Olympian, and I finally done that. So for the first time in, gosh, 17 years, I could finally breathe. Mm. And so when we talk about easing, just a huge, huge relief. And I think that had a very negative impact actually on my body. That was the time actually post-Olympics that I started to get and I developed ulcerative colitis. Hmm. So I think the release of stress into my body post-Olympics was immense.
Yeah.
So that's a really, you know, that's a really interesting thing. But the other thing when we talk about easing and those periods of pushing and pulling, you know, there's one thing we do here in the gym, like we've had amazing transformations with our girls here in the gym. You know, they've come in at like 28% body fat, and some of them have dropped all the way down to 15%. And one of the questions, body fat, one of the questions that they ask is, can't I just stay at like 15% body fat? The answer is absolutely not. Like, it's amazing to get yourself into an amazing shape once a year, but you're not supposed to stay there for 12 months.
Yeah.
You know, in track and field, we have a winter period, a period of, I wouldn't say hibernation, but a change in training where your body, you know, you're in a intense and hard period of training, but your body needs refueling, it needs rest, it needs recovery. And so one of the things that I've been trying to get our girls to really understand is that we're not supposed to be in peak shape 24/7, you know, 365. There are seasons for pushing and there are seasons for pulling back and allowing the body to recover from the stresses that we place upon it.
Yeah. I mean, don't you think that the mental part of that is the hardest part though? Because I think, you know, what you talked about was feeling like you could finally have a big breath at the end of it. And when you're explaining those things to clients, it's also talking about the fact that that's normal. That's okay. And I think sometimes the reason we struggle and we go to these extremes, we go to dry January and then we rebound right back. And then in February, it's back to drinking and partying and like letting loose. I think we go back and forth between those two extremes because the extreme is more appealing to our mentality. Mm-hmm. And we think that mentally, if we're all in, we're all in. And if we're not all in, then the only other option is being all out. Mm. And I think that the healthiest way to have it, what you're talking about, is being within a specific healthy threshold.
Yes.
Right? There's times where you're going to be a little bit on one side of that threshold and times where you're going to be a little side of the other, and accepting and understanding and acknowledging what that threshold is for you and your specific goal. If it's body weight or body fat percentage and body composition, there's going to be a threshold that you're going to kind of maneuver within. And for women specifically, depending upon where they're at on their cycle and how much water they're retaining, all those different things are going to impact some of those numbers even throughout the course of a month, let alone the course of a year. And so I think the mental part of that is challenging for some people, because the extremes to all of our minds feel like if we're extreme, it's going to work better, right? And the opposite.
Where does that come from though?
I mean, I don't know. We'd have to ask some of these clinical psychologists. Let's go back to the guy from Britain who said that they're only drinking 6 days instead of seven after dry January. What did he say? Let's find him. Sam, call him up.
But like, where does that mentality come from? I feel like it's more prevalent here in the US, that kind of grind culture. If you're not sweating, then it's not working. That kind of all or nothing attitude. Like, how in a world of all or nothing, how do you personally exercise and find moderation? Like, what are the tricks, the tools, the things that keep you within your healthy threshold?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I think that is a skill. So it's a skill that's developed over time. It's not something that you're always going to get right. So you have to have a certain understanding of yourself and being forgiving of the fact that you should be constantly refining that skill. Mm. The second thing is, I think you have to have a big vision of why you're trying to accomplish something in the first place. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't matter to you, then the threshold that you're working within means nothing. Mm. For some people, there's a triggering moment, right? We know this in fitness.
Yeah.
When someone comes into the gym after a long period of being away or never working out at all, generally there's some sort of triggering event. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's an upcoming wedding. Mm-hmm. It's an upcoming vacation. Mm-hmm. Other times they saw a picture of themselves and they didn't recognize themselves anymore. Other times it's a health concern.
Yep.
Or maybe a partner, or maybe they're going through a breakup. There's usually a triggering event that sparks that.
Yeah.
And so it becomes important because of that triggering event made them feel something that they wanted to change. Mm. And I think as an athlete, it's easier because you literally have an event.
Yeah. You right? have, or there already is a scheduled important event.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. there's also a scoreboard.
Yes.
You did well or you didn't do as well as you wanted to. You yeah. won or you lost.
Yes.
And I think in life, we don't have that as frequently unless we have some sort of triggering event. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important to, in order to have that threshold and that moderation, that balance, and to avoid the extremes, you have to have a big vision of what you want, mm. right? And that is, what do you want to do? Who do you want to be? Mm. What do you want to have, mm. right? If you're not sure what those things are, you have to go back to those three things.
How do you get clear on what you want? Like, what would you advise somebody to do if they're not clear on, like, you know, just this week, one of our clients came in and was like, you know, I must admit, I've been kind of slacking off this year already because I didn't really have anything that I'm gearing up for, you know? So yeah. like, how did you advise your client in that situation? How did you bring them back around?
Yeah, when it came down to it was, okay, let's get outside of just the numbers. Let's talk about what can your body do? Mm-hmm. Is there a performance goal that you're looking forward to, right? Is there something outside of the gym that you want to go do? Mm. You know what I'm saying? For some people, that can be a physical activity. For other people, it's envisioning themselves on their next vacation in their, you know, their board shorts or in a tuxedo at some event on the red carpet or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Or for others, it's who do you want to be? Mm. Who do you see your best self as? And how do we prepare you for that person? And that's not always an aesthetic thing. Mm-hmm. It's a feeling and a sensation. And people feel a certain way about themselves if they're healthy, mm. right? If they're active, mm. right? If they're able to do certain things and live the lifestyle they want. So I think you have to explore those things. And with everybody, it's a little bit different. But mm. oftentimes, it's outside of just the metrics. What's your body composition? What's this? What's that? Mm-hmm. Let's get outside of that a little bit and talk about the bigger picture of why those things even are important to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I think what a shame it is for people to have a triggering event in order to make those necessary lifestyle changes. And often a triggering event is often a negative event. Mm. You know, I would love to see a world where the triggering event is like a positive event. Perhaps like, oh, you just had a baby. Oh, you know, one of my clients that was coming in was like getting ready for his dad bod because his baby was on the way. And that I just thought was just the sweetest thing. We talked about, you know, creating daddy arms and stuff like this. To me, I feel like, aren't we just always operating from a place of lack when it comes from this, when we're talking about restriction? You know, aren't we just operating from a place of fear of like, oh, you know, dry January, yeah, because I've been drinking too much. Yeah. And now I need to put a lid on it. And shouldn't we be reversing that trend and thinking about, you know, coming at these opportunities to improve ourselves from a place of abundance? Isn't that a completely different mindset altogether?
Yeah, I believe so. And I also think that you brought up a really good point that sparked my thought about when you do restrict yourself from something, replacing it with something that is a better habit or lifestyle choice that you want, right? And I think so often, you know, we were having a conversation about someone who said that, you know, when things are challenging for them, the thing that gives them a moment of happiness is having something to eat and something that usually is a little bit not on the healthier side of the spectrum with that choice. And it's like, okay, cool. And they don't want to do that anymore. because they have a bigger goal now.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't think that's enough. I think the thing is, well, like, what does it look like for you to make a better choice? What are other things that give you a moment of happiness in your life? Right. And it doesn't have to be food related. Mm-hmm. It's not replace that food with a healthier food. It's saying, okay, if you're going to quote unquote restrict yourself from eating in those moments when you need something to make you pick up your space and your mood, what are you going to replace it with
what
in your life?
What are you going to add?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Add something that you want to do.
Absolutely. You know, Kelsey Heenan was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and she was talking about improving your relationship with food. And she was talking about we're constantly having those messages pumped at us about what we should be taking away. But she was saying that the beauty of food and improving your relationship with food is actually thinking about what you can add. And so thinking about the things that you are actively choosing. And so I would say to, you know, our friend who's, you know, expressed that desire to want to change, like, really remind yourself every single day when you wake up, you get to choose exactly who you want to be. So all those people who have, you know, completed dry January and they're now well into February, getting on to March, you get to choose who shows up at the social events. You get to choose who you are to your friends. You get to choose who you are to your family. More importantly, you get to choose who you are to yourself every day and how you treat this body and respect this physical being that you've been, like, blessed with. And I say that to say, like, one of the things we talked about at home was you talked about guilt and shame. Tell us about that, Eric, like the idea of the role that guilt and shame has to play when we're choosing habits for ourselves that perhaps not the healthiest.
Yeah, I think sometimes people restrict themselves because they feel a sense of guilt or shame, and that's what leads to the restriction. But I also think that people who take restriction too far often feel guilt or shame for breaking that promise to themselves. But oftentimes that promise is so extreme that they're setting themselves up for failure, right? And what that does is creates a mindset of that you are powerless over the choices that you make. And so I think it's a really, it's a, in my opinion, a dangerous game to play, right? Setting really severe restrictions that are almost impossible to keep. You break it, you feel guilt and shame as a result.
You beat yourself
up. And it reinforces
up.
That you're powerless over the choices that you have. And that, I think, is kind of a bad cycle to find yourself in.
100%.
You know?
Mentioning the word power there.
Yeah.
What I want to do is just back and forth really quickly about how, what are some tips and tricks that people can use to feel more empowered about their choices? So I'm going to start. So I think it doesn't matter where you are in your life, you know, choices, whether you've got this goal, that goal, like implementing, especially when it comes to food, a cheat meal, something that is for you to enjoy once a week.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't matter whether it's not that it has to, let's say, for example, you have a macronutrient or a calorie goal, make sure it fits the calorie goal. You know, we always recommend to our clients, if you're going to eat out on a Saturday night and enjoy yourself, you put the food that you want to enjoy first into your plan, and then you add all of the stuff around it. And try and make it
a part of the plan.
Exactly. 100%. Yeah. Anything else that makes it is going to make someone feel more empowered to perhaps make sacrifices?
I'm trying to think of something that comes to mind, because to me, that's the same thing that I would have said, is building something into your plan to make it a part of your reality, right? Because it provides something to you. I don't know. Do you have any others?
Absolutely.
Give me a moment to think here.
So one of the other things I would say for all of those women out there is, you know, restriction can show up in our lives, not just on our plate. It can show up in so many other areas that indicate that we're not taking care of ourselves. So this week, for example, we were invited out to the Magic Castle, and I said to Eric, I don't want to go. The reason I don't want to go is because I hurt my arm and I can't brush my hair and I haven't got my eyebrows done, and I just felt like I had the ick. I didn't feel comfortable in my body. And so I say that to say, like, do not restrict looking after yourself. That might be getting your eyebrows tweezed. It might be, you know, going, getting a wax done. It might be taking care of your nails, getting a pedicure done, going to the hair salon. Like, don't forget that, you know, denying yourself self-care is also a form of restriction. And you're Great. Kind of restricting the way in which perhaps you show up in the world and who you show up as and how you feel when you interact with people.
Yeah. One thing that you've told me in moments when things are challenging or you're feeling a certain, you're not feeling at your best, is we do not hide.
Mm.
Right? You say that to me all the time. We do not hide. And so I think people who are trying to make healthier choices oftentimes will hide.
Yeah.
Right? Because they don't want to have to face someone saying, as an example, at a social event, hey, have a drink. Why aren't you drinking? Why aren't you going on? Right? And so they choose to actually restrict themselves from social connection mm-hmm. and things that they enjoy that don't require alcohol for them to necessarily be happy. Mm-hmm. And so that's a small example, but don't restrict yourself from the opportunities and hide from things that are positive in your life because one element of that involves a decision that you're making that's good for you, right? Don't hide, right? Get out there.
Don't hide just because it's challenging. That's because right. It will be more challenging if you're the only one not drinking.
Yeah, and it's going to be even more hard if you're, you know, holding yourself up at home all the time because you're trying to make a good choice, right? Mm. So I think that's something that is important. Don't hide from yourself. You know, and don't hide from others and the decisions you're trying to make.
I love that, Eric. I think we're going to end on that. That's a wicked, unless you've got anything else.
I got nothing.
Wraps it up. In summary, restriction can be both a good thing and a bad thing if extremes are applied. The key is to strike a healthy balance that is right for you. Now, that concludes this episode of Slay. Stay tuned for more empowering discussions on female health, fitness, and life. You can follow me at Louise Hazel on social media, and you can follow Eric at Eric Strangis. You can check out the Slay brand at Slay Athletic, and don't forget to subscribe to the Slay podcast if you haven't done so already on Spotify, and leave us a review. You can also get any of the tools and resources that we mention in our podcasts on the Slay app. Download it now for free from the App Store and join our online community. Thanks for joining in. We'll speak to you next week.